The Alpha Sessions.
Hello everyone and welcome to the Alpha Sessions. It's me, Lucy Rowe, again, and today I've got Penny Skint in the studio. Welcome everyone.
Hello.
Welcome. Otherwise known as Dan, Liam and Meg. Bass, and we've got guitar. And actually, this is not the full production today. I've had a nice taster of the acoustic pared down version of Penny Skint, which was quite a privilege, I think.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for that. Now, I feel like we've got a lot to cover, but let's start with how this came to be. Give me all the deepest lore on how Penny Skint was formed.
Oh.
Go as deep as you
Who's
like.
The lore man? Dan's the lore man.
I feel like Dan's
the lore man. We're not really lore. We're more like, oh, squirrel.
Wait. How deep are we going? How far back?
Well, that's up to the lore man.
Okay.
The lore man. That's his name.
It's quite funny. It goes a long way back. So these two went to school together.
Nice.
Not really friends, but just knew of.
So
they were kind of like long-standing Facebook, Instagram, just loose followers, as you do. You just followed everyone at school. That was the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then me and Meg met at college. So we've been doing music for a long time at college. So we're loose friends through that. But then, it was Liam, you put a post out looking for a drummer, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, me and Meg have been in a relationship a long time. And Meg made the biggest regret of her life in sending me the link for Liam's advert for a drummer. And she's now picked up the third person in our relationship.
Dan didn't like me at first, however.
We can't escape.
Dan hated me. And I knew he did as well. It took a while to get this work. At first, he was like, I'm not sure on this
guy. He came. So you were looking for a drummer. I showed you the post. You got in touch and went for like a rehearsal.
Yeah.
To go in. And I remember so clearly that you got in the car afterwards and you went, this guy is either going to make the world happen or he's off his head.
Yeah,
both. By the way.
And he was like, he's either completely legit or he's completely lost his mind.
Yeah. He's either delusional or he's onto something.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know what to make of it. I just didn't know. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you'd already met Jack.
Yeah, Jack. I actually called when I was working on a scaffolding site, and I was like, I just need a guitarist. I need to make this happen. Yeah. And I had someone who knew him. I knew him through a friend. I got his number through a friend, and then it was just me and him at the time. Was that we probably need a drummer, and then I managed to get Dan. I managed to, sort of persuade him to come on board.
Yeah.
And then we were rehearsing at Banana Road Studios down in Erith quite a lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then Megan, you were doing. I remember you were filming for us little bits as well at first, and then we couldn't find a bassist, and Meg was like, "Ah, I'll step in."
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Meg, an acoustic singer songwriter in her own right, and bassists turns out don't really exist. They're a myth of a creature.
Elusive.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're just hiding under stairs or something.
Yeah.
Meg was like, I'll give that a crack. I'll give it a go. Played acoustic guitar for long enough. You sort of like, and I don't want to put the talent of bassists down, but having never played bass before, we had a headline show in 3 weeks, and that was Meg's first gig on bass in an actual band. To be fair, like it's kind of the first time you've actually gigged
in a band. Yeah. No, it was my first gig, first time playing bass in front of people that weren't these. For I will say to everybody out there, it wasn't particularly great, but I got on. We did it. I'm a bit of a like rubbish musician in terms of like I still don't know what notes I'm playing. I work on a pure numerical system, so I know you hate to tell the stories.
Yeah,
don't tell people like it's the truth. No, because I'm not very good with sequences, but I can. It's just the way it's my learning order.
You're more of a songwriter than
But to be honest with you, I'm keeping now just because it winds Imma Jack up so much. Like, just learn that.
Yeah, because
it's what makes us a great punk-esque band, though. As long as you play what we do immaculately, which you do, that's all that matters.
Oh, there you go.
Do you know what I mean?
The fascinating thing to me is that most of our keys are an E, C, or a D. Play a C. Where's that? Where every song is. So joke.
No,
Mega smashed it. Smashed it.
Oh, thanks.
So, yeah, that's sort of the lore.
It's been chronically full-time, madly full-time, deep end ever since, isn't it, really?
Yeah man.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, these things do just come together in weird ways, don't they? And even if you feel uncertain in the beginning, like, sometimes you just rub each other the wrong way, but it's because there's always that slight suspicion, and it's a very intimate thing to be doing as well.
Yeah.
I think it's because me and Dan are very, very complete different people from sort of different walks of, two different walks of life, or the way that we sort of live life.
Yeah,
but I think that's what it is. But it really worked really well.
I will say though, they have become like
work-wise.
They're inseparable. they're with each other all day, every life, day. Yeah. So it's really worked out, I think. Like from not being sure at the beginning, actually when they got to know each other, they've both been like, they are both, you can't have one without the other now. So that's
And from that into making music, because that's kind of your musical life starts to come into learning about each other as people and how that plays into what you write as well, and the kind of music you make. Because you all come from different kind of backgrounds and influences, and musically, I want to know more about how this sound is created. Is it?
Ooh,
where's the core?
That's a brilliant question. Can I?
Yeah, yeah, go for it. Yeah.
We were actually a different band before called Apollo Blue. It's spelled Blair, wasn't it?
Blair.
The French way. And we were just like an indie band, and you know, we had a few band members come and go. Mm-hmm. And then we were actually in Newcastle at the time. I'm gonna go on a bit of a tangent here, if that's okay. We were planning a gig up in Newcastle, and then someone let us down. And then we, on the way back, we were like, "What are we gonna do?" Because I couldn't really play properly lead guitar or anything. And we were like, "What we could do is like, okay, we're gonna become a three piece." And then there's a few bands that have really shaped our sound, and one of them is a French band called Last Train, who are absolutely phenomenal. We went and saw them at the Grace in London, and we were just blown away, all of us. We were like, oh my lord,
life changing.
And then even down to like the lighting, the sound, it's the whole thing is about, it's like cinematic visuals, and it's made for like sort of film. And that's, we're big sort of filmism. It's something that we really care about, his storytelling, and the band that does that. So they were a big part of our sound. Idols were a big, especially the punkier songs.
Well, it's just that kind of thing, isn't it? The tastes come in as well. It's like you two especially, you've got that folk side.
Yeah, that's really weird.
That folk
singer
songwriter side. And I've always played in punk bands, and it's kind of like when you start sharing music across each other, you go, oh, there's a bit of this and a bit of that. So you start getting that kind of folky feel in Liam's songwriting, but then I won't play anything other than Big Toms. So you get that drive and you get that melody. And then all the inspirations and stuff, we got really deeply obsessed because we were toneless, weren't we, for a long time. We didn't understand tone, like just how fine a craft it was. And then Last Train and the
Sort of really zoned in on pedals. We're like, okay, pedals exist. And then it was like, you know, little things, just the way to play a guitar or the way to play the drums, like everything has pocket and feel and melody and movement and tone, and we really zoned in on that. But on the whole thing, like me and Meg especially, like my favourite artist of all time is Paolo Nutini, which you bring, like a lot of stuff that I listen to, and Meg as well, is like folk and sort of soul and blues, isn't it? I think it really translates well, especially going into songwriting for like an alternative rock / punk band, because you can then, was the lady at that we played at that festival at Faversham, and she went, I loved how heavy it was, but it still had like melody. Which is kind of nice.
I think the influences all put together have kind of made like a, she had got big Paolo, like I love like Hozier. And you've got your punk influence, and I think if you put all those together, you can kind of hear it.
I've been breaking a sweat just to pay my rent. The only joy I get, I'm on a cigarette. You see this blood through my mind, squeeze his neck till he cries. It's so made by design, I'm breaking spirit is fine. Machines and parasites make a grown man cry, just trying to get by. Same growth. outsider. Difference what they call me. Why'd you stand alone when you could stand beside me? Cut from the same cloth, we're cut from the same cloth.
Alpha Sessions.
So when you're writing new things, and I do want to talk about the songs that you're playing today as well, how do you go about writing that? Because it's difficult to balance the dynamics, especially when you come from different influences, and you want to put that in there. Like, you want to have some folkier or soulier stuff. And how do you feel about putting that forward?
Generally, our sort of process is that Liam will write, being like the singer, it's generally his melody, so you will go and sort of start to write. Some things will have a base for like sort of verses and a chorus or a little idea, and then you'll bring it to the band and generally sort of add in like the drums and the bass, and we'll sort of turn it into something that starts off acoustic and then turn it into.
Megan's fantastic at tweaking things, or like maybe this would be a better bass, especially a melody. Yeah. That's Megan's real strong point. Yours is. Yeah, Dan's really good at for pointing out everything that he doesn't like.
Well, you need someone.
Whereas I'm like, I've got to do, because you know, well, Dan's a perfectionist.
Your thing is always, was it James Brown that was like, everything's a drum? Was that James Brown?
That's
kind of the way you come at it, with like, because we tend to drive it a little bit too bluesy sometimes to fit with, like, we'll really like trail off of it, and we're like, oh yeah, maybe we can do this thing, and Dan's like, okay, hold on, like, let's bring it back to what it was supposed to be.
And what is it we say? Like, if you don't like something, say something. Mm-hmm. Because we've also got that knack of sitting with
music.
When he
said that, I said, I don't like you.
Yeah.
He said, say it.
Because you can get too far down the line with the song. And then suddenly you record it, and you get, like, the master back, and you've scraped the pennies to get the recording together, and you go, oh, do you know what? Actually, I never really liked that melody. Yeah. It was never quite finished. It was never quite right. So we do a lot of kind of, sometimes a little bit maybe too obsessively. Sometimes you do need to let a song breathe, but you do get caught in that kind of just,
I'd say we do go through phases of writing as well. Sometimes it'll be months and months without anything.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden everything sort of flushes in, especially for myself personally. The way that I really like to write music is that I like to go and live life first, because a lot of what we write about is quite self-reflective, or about something we've experienced, or looking from the outside, because we're quite reflective people, aren't we?
Yeah.
So a lot of it is, for me personally, if I'm going to go write it, so I like to go disappear for 2 months and write and just live life and experience a few maybe crazy things, maybe like
trauma dump
into a song.
And we've got a knack of having like 5 or 6 completely separate things. It'd be like a riff part there, drum part there.
And then sometimes it
melody,
merged,
lyric,
merge.
Lyric. It's like, hang on, if you slap that with that. And
what song did we do that with? I can't remember.
There's been a few. There's been quite a few, yeah. Where they've been two completely different songs. Actually, that fits. Mm-hmm. But it can be, summed up pretty well, to be fair.
Do you think?
Yeah.
Lyrically, then, so do you usually come through with the lyrical ideas early on? Or is it like, it can, like you say, it can kind of come from everywhere. Everywhere's got an element that they go like, this could be an idea.
Yeah.
But then,
I think melody normally comes first, isn't it? And it's normally like, that's the kind of, I think that's the important thing, because we're big believers in, like, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. That's very important, especially to me.
Yeah.
And then we'll sort of iron out the sort of the way it's said, maybe a bit further on. Like, we've been having them conversations recently. Like, okay, maybe the way, why are you saying this, or you know? And also, we like to keep things. I think we write quite vaguely.
Yeah.
We like to keep things vague, because if you're too on the nose, I just don't, it doesn't feel right. I'd like to say we're quite good at that, keeping things vague, leaving for interpretation.
And I think a lot of the time you come with the lyrics, but we've had a couple of, like, we've got a song called Karma, and that I think came from you, and we were cooking fajitas, and we was like, right, while we're here,
we all sat
and, like, and it was the first song I think that we'd all contributed.
Yeah, actually written
into all of us, written the three of us,
scribbling words down.
Like, yeah, mm. No, that one. Or generally, like, you'll write something and then we'll go, oh, what about this?
Mm.
Or we're quite open with it, so it's not like none of us will write anything all the time, but a lot of the time we let Liam.
Mm-hmm.
Do you, because I feel like when someone's bringing, like, a melody or if you've started the lyrics or something like that, I feel like it's that person's story to tell sometimes, and that you have to let it come out of them. So a lot of times,
I think as well, it's like we like to write something that actually has some substance to it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Is that the right?
No, you're right.
This can happen. I can say things out of turn.
I think we try
not
to just fall into that trap of, like, rhyming bees with knees because it rhymes and then we'll stick it in the song. So we try and stay away from that if we can.
We like things with a bit of meaning and weight and depth behind it.
Yeah.
Not saying it has to be deep. I'm just saying it has to have some sort of element of truth, and not just because you want to write something catchy. Yeah.
If you're going to do art, do it with every inch. And we do sometimes, we drown in that a little bit. We torture ourselves a little bit. But you're right, we do, we try.
And I want to touch more on meaning, on specifically the first song that you play as well, Cut From The Same Cloth. Let's talk more depth about that song. I want to know, like, what it kind of means to you. Unless you want to keep it mysterious and vague, like you just said. But I like to, you know, hear where things come from, what the original meanings were to you, and how you connected with that.
Yeah, I think for us as a band, our big, something that we really like to sort of, not push, but convey, is, like, we really like a sense of community, whether that be ourselves or our wider group or just in general. I think everywhere and everything and every society, community, whatever you want to call it, community is so important. So I think Cut From The Same Cloth was very much like, you and me are the same, and you can view it how you like. You can view it with, you know, class or just communities, whatever you like. But it's more like, don't go against. We don't need to be going against each other. We're cut from the same cloth. We are from the same place. Like, we should be uniting, and that's kind of where it came from.
I think it really touches a light on how not alone you actually are as well. That's why it's called Cut From The Same Cloth. Because I think Liv is like, I've been up all night. And it's a bit like, sort of, you can't really go to sleep because you've got this, I've got bills to pay, I've got that to do, right? So Cut From The Same Cloth really, I think, touched on that quite nicely. And that you're not alone in that. Mm-hmm. And like, everyone, like, you know, especially with, like, this is, if we're going on deep, like, suicide rates and stuff like that. And it's like, it's just a reminder that everyone's going through it.
Yeah.
And then everyone's sort of, like, red ants in a bowl being shaken, and then angry at the ones who angry at each other, but not the ones that shook it, right?
Yeah.
So to speak.
Mm. Yeah.
So that's what Cut From The Same Cloth is essentially about, because you see it firsthand when you go out, or when you're out on the street, the pubs or whatever, or you're out at the venues, and, like, you know, it can become a sort of dog eat dog world, and people sort of fight each other for silly reasons because of egos and insecurities, when really that's not the case, and that's what sort of Cut From The Same Cloth is.
Yeah. And, you know, that's also important, I think, for the whole of the music community, because there is that sense, we were talking about this earlier when we were like getting ready, there is that sense of a dog-eat-dog industry that's always been there, but it seems to be a bit more gritty at the moment.
Yeah.
And
I, to be honest with you, I actually only feel that way about London. I know that's... we've played... we've played all around the UK. Newcastle. Not like, oh, look at us, but, like, you know, we played in Paisley, Newcastle, Sheffield, all around.
Yeah.
We got up to Paisley. We're going up there actually in April, and the people are amazing. Musicians are absolutely lovely. Everyone's supporting each other. Whereas in terms of London, I like to call it the most sociable, unsociable place.
Yeah.
You go there, no musician talks to each other. Yeah. Everyone's just getting there for their own crowd, leaves early.
Mm.
There's not in every case, that's just like 80% of the time, because we've met amazing people who are on the same wavelength.
I think there's an apathy in general when it comes to the London music scene. And actually, Cut from the Same Cloth is kind of a perfect description of what the hell's going on there, because you've got all these bands in their own corners getting resentful of everyone else who's in exactly the same situation, just trying to scrap it up through the local gig scene, when actually if everyone just turned around and went, we're all trying to do the same thing here. Like, really, problems with, you know, the music scene, promoters, whatever, the drama there, but like, instead of fighting, the bands having issues with each other, everyone needs to look outwards or upwards. Do you know what I mean?
I wouldn't have wanted to be on like a sinking ship with this, with most of like the London music scene, because tell you what, you're drowning. There's no life raft coming for you, mate.
They're kicking you off there.
Yeah, chill out.
This is my thingy.
Yeah, my thing. Yeah. So, what is it? A Rose and Jack.
Yeah. They could both fit.
You could do it as a meme. Do you know, like, it was like Rose and then Jack, and then Jack's like London musicians.
It is a bit like that, yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. On that, the live scene, you play quite a lot. It sounds like you're quite active on the gigging circuit. So what are your feelings on playing outside of London? Do you think this is something we need to break out of? Because there's the impression that London is like the core and you have to get there.
No, it's not. I don't think
and
it is.
And maybe so, when you've seen the other side, it's like, hang on a sec, what are we doing here? It's like we've all been hypnotised into thinking this is where we need to be.
Yeah.
And then when you're here, you think, what's everyone doing here?
We've met loads of bands, haven't we, that are like, oh, I moved to London to do music, and we're like, why?
Yeah.
I really do think that, like, the sort of spotlight around London and it being the place of music needs to stop, because it's fallen away. Like, the reputation hasn't fallen away, but the reality has fallen away. Yeah. We've gone to so many gigs that are clinging on to, like, oh, this person played here 30 years ago.
That's a great point.
And you're like, okay, great, but no one's coming here for that anymore.
You still got yeast in your beer pumps.
Yeah. So it's like, it's a real, whereas like, and generally as well, I think there's a much bigger audience for original music outside of London. I think London, because it's got lots of really big music venues there that, like, you know, you've got like the O2, you've got like the Wembley, you've got this, that and the other, that I think, because there's lots of them in a small area, I think people think maybe that's the place to go and that's where you're going to get noticed because those people are around there. But actually, the way I genuinely believe that, go as far and wide as you can, play everywhere, play to as many people as possible, because you can play to a room of 100 people. If they're not there to listen to live music, they're going to be talking to each other and you're not going to get heard, whereas you can play to 5 people in a small bar somewhere else and those 5 people will then come to your gigs whenever you're close, and they're invested.
The prime example of that is when we went back up to Paisley and we played at the Keg again, and that guy came along and said, I've been waiting for you guys to come back. He said, I saw your name and he was there. And
he said, we don't get that in London.
It might not even just be the city thing. It's so oversaturated.
Yeah.
I think the one place, and I think this is where I think the London music scene has got a conflict, because it's easy to be negative, but there are some real special pockets about the London music scene, and it exists in those quirky little independent events, in the bookshops and the coffee shop gigs and all that kind of like really kind of niche community pockets. That London's really special for that. But when it comes to like your run of the mill like band scene, the legacy venues that have had all these names play and all the rest of it, that's where London seems to really suffer, but you don't really see that elsewhere. You don't really see it in like Newcastle and the likes that, where there is, I mean, we've not been yet, we'd love to, but even like in Ireland, where like the band scene is what it's about.
Irish bands seem to be really like the real thing at the moment.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, there's just a brilliant musicians coming out of Ireland, and they're coming over to London absolutely taking it by storm. Which is hats off, really.
Lost in a whole lot of Alpha Sessions.
And on social media, which is a massive topic, and it's good to skim over, but if you get into it, we could be here for many days.
Yeah, we could do. As you can see, we can sort of ramble on. So apologies.
No, I'm enjoying it. I'm having a good time. Your socials are quite well curated. They come across really, you've got an image, you know, you've got an aesthetic, and they're regular. And that's something that is genuinely quite difficult to do. A lot of musicians really struggle with that because it's such a task. It's such a whole career in itself.
It takes its practice.
But how do you feel about having to keep that up? Is it something that's kind of just, you're in the process now, it's a habit?
I'm going to duck out of this one because I'm awful at it.
This is story time. The social media games is torture. No way, don't do that. The social media games torture because it's you get really in your head about curating your art and putting out your kind of best foot forward. Like that, you feel like that's what it should be about. But then you hear all the noise, which is post every day, every day, three or four times a day, and like. It's all that like just like candid, just selfie stuff, mime to your song, and everyone thinks like that's the route to success. But then you see everyone doing it, and no one actually getting anywhere with it. And you're like, okay, something's wrong here. We just decided to make the commitment. We've always had a bad relationship with social media. None of us get on with it. None of us really enjoy it. You do get caught in your head about contributing to something that you don't necessarily love. But one thing we do love is film, photography. Mm. All those things. Now, if that's what we're passionate about and social media has to be the output, then we can make our peace with that. And at the turn of the new year, we started just before the new year because we were just like, why are we waiting for a date to start something? But to make something that we can be proud of and share it every day. Mm. And just do that. It's been mad because we've been like coming up to midnight on a Thursday. I'm like, we've not posted. I need a caption. What do we want to say? And we have to turn to the band. It's like someone needs to have something to say today because we can't just post any like, "Hi, this is my band. Listen to this song." It's like someone, please have something to say today. And so just keep that tank.
I think the interesting thing about this as well, and this is just within our band, is that like you two have committed to doing it because like we're going to just commit to posting once a day, every day, and
for a year,
and it not be. Miming to your own song or doing a dance to it or whatever people are doing these days. But it is fascinating because you do suddenly realise you find out everything that's wrong with social media by doing it because you're suddenly like, okay, but I don't want to have to find something to say. I want to have something to say. Yeah. I don't want, do you know? And you start very quickly realising the flaws in this post every day to stay relevant. And actually, you know, they say post every day for the algorithm. It doesn't work. No one... Listen, if you... And we know it because we see each other every day. When you see someone's face every day, you quite quickly get sick of it. It doesn't take off. And we know that... You have to have a day off, right? You have to... So, like, when we're... when we're, like, post... I don't... I'd, like, it's... We're doing it because we've committed to it and...
Yeah. We're actually really, really enjoying it as well. We found our love for it.
It's an interesting creative process.
It didn't just happen overnight. This has been 4 years of these conversations. It's been the same conversations for 4 years and only just figuring out. Mm. It's not even just like, for instance, you talk about branding, like what we want it to look like, because that will change and evolve. But having conversation, even just getting a workflow of it, getting into the flow, because like we really struggle with just the setup. Like the setup alone and... like, you know, the editing, like, it takes so much time. And even just be able to find the flow of doing that, to then post once a day.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Like, we had to get about 90 bits of content just to get ahead, so then we won't fall behind.
I hate that word so much.
Sorry.
Okay. It's a hollow word.
Sorry, yes, it is. Apologies.
No, but it's the only word, isn't it? Yeah.
Sorry.
We should coin a new term here and now.
Yeah.
Yeah, we
had
no swearing anyway when we started.
Yeah. It's taken a good four years to get to this point here. Because we haven't had the answers for that. Because we've done we have like sort of surrendered a bit at times. We're like, oh, okay, maybe we'll give it a go and jump, because everyone's like, why don't you just do it? You know, everyone's doing it, but then you're ultimately doing it for the wrong reasons. The reason we create is because we feel like we have something to say, and if that can change someone's day or evoke some sort of emotion, then we've done the right thing, and that's what art is and creating is.
And I think actually one thing I'd say about social media as well is it does generally bring the people and a natural at it to the top, but I mean in a positive way. It's like, okay, there might be an artist who seems to be like playing the social media game, doing what you might consider trending, but you can see it in them that it's natural to them. Mm. It's a natural output for them. It's a natural existence for them. So they will just climb, and you can see it. Whereas when an artist where that isn't naturally in their bones, naturally how they live. And also, I do think there's a generational difference there, just how relevant social media is in life, that you can see it in someone. It's not that's not you. Do you know what I mean? It's not, no matter how much it well presented at it, I think social media is actually really good at filtering accidentally through, like, the creative naturalness in that game. Does that make sense?
Really good music can get buried in that.
Yeah, of course it can. Yeah.
If you're not naturally good at it, unfortunately, you do get a bit sort of sunk under the pile
There's been a few artists that we've seen over the years on socials, because we just, on socials, and we've seen them early and gone, give that 2 years, they'll have 100,000 followers or whatever.
Yeah. We are the reason for their success.
But when you get obsessed on this stuff so long, you can start to see it.
We manifested it for them.
Okay, no, this makes sense. And why? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Really good. Who's a good example? Even
James the Seventh.
James the Seventh was a great example of that. Yeah. There's someone we found on TikTok just a few days ago called Moonvine. We're now like spotlighting people. But like, it's just this Berlin artist. Don't really know anything about. But 100 followers when I first saw this video, and I thought, that's a vibey tune.
Yeah.
And this is natural to her. Check it. After seeing it yesterday, checked it today, 1,000 followers in the space of 2 days. Yeah, you're like, okay,
insane,
isn't it? Rocket ship.
There you're going to go.
Do you know, but that social media game is a natural...
virality.
Yeah. Do you know, it's a natural output. It's not...
Yeah, yeah. And the amount of time it does take, even people who are natural at it, even if they know they're natural at it, they think, oh, I should put more time into this. Yeah. That time should be distributed in a way that you can record your songs and write the songs and, like, it was,
100%.
Get together and...
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's, music.
Yeah, it's scary how time-consuming it is.
Yeah.
And like you said, the more time you're doing that, you're not actually spending creating and doing what you're...
And
you're meant to be a musician.
How do you find the time to record together? Is this something that you record a lot? Do you hope to record more and get more out
in
there?
Terms of what?
In terms of...
The stuff that we're putting out, like the visuals and stuff.
No, I mean
music.
Oh, okay, music. Again, same with the creating the art or the here and now. Is that what you said? Here and now. Doesn't matter. Anyway,
that whole conversation in his head that we weren't privy to.
There's three actually. It's taken so. For instance. That was the chair, by the way. That wasn't me. for instance, and to record a song professionally, it costs anywhere, like, for us, it was like £600-£700. So we recorded two songs recently. Professionally, it was like £1,200, right?
Yeah.
And so we were like, we've spent so
lucky with that as well.
Yeah, lucky.
We've worked with brilliant, really good people who arguably probably could be charging more and in spaces that we shouldn't really have access to. We don't have No one has any money to record with. The producers, they need to be making a living as well. Do you know what I mean? So it's like there's all this, there's a real financial stack problem where like the money can't even flow upstream because no one's got it in the first place.
Yeah, but we tried it, didn't we? We were owing like we were having to like scrape it together on the day and like big shout out to Ian. Ian Flynn and Lucy go away for like helping us out
because
we had to in the end we're in a really lucky position where we all work at we've got like a rehearsal studios we're all there like well you two are there every day so we're lucky in the sense that it's not set up for recording but we can kind of make it work none of us are producers we don't understand the dark science that goes into producing music so we're now trying our best to do it ourselves so we're hoping that we can get some more stuff because what we realized was while we were trying to create social media posts get gigs get money in through the door get money to record take the time to record also, we were releasing one or two songs a year which is not the rate that we would want to do
don't
it
actually have the art that it is that you're meant to be creating
like,
the one thing we're actually meant to be putting out is the one thing we don't have.
Which is madness. We're trying to sort of record ourselves.
The demos, aren't they? Really, because there's no point of us releasing. We're at a stage where we haven't really got like a solid, like huge following, which is totally okay. So at the moment, for us to go pay that kind of money and then release it, and it's sort of only our friends and family and a few people that really like our stuff listen to it. We do no one any justice, and biggest thing, we do the songs any justice, and it deserves that. The art is the important thing. And what we're doing at the moment is we're recording loads of demos at a standard that we think's the best that it can be.
It's the best that we
can.
And
then we are putting them on SoundCloud and just trying to push people there, and also we're using them sounds on the art that we're putting out. And hopefully a few people to come along and be like, oh, are you going to release this? You know, that kind of way. So we have got a few songs on Spotify. And we've got a couple on SoundCloud as well. But we're just sort of demoing at the moment. And until there's a real like momentum, then we'll think about properly recording.
Yeah, because it's just that thing, because we as individuals, obviously you've got life to consider as well. I mean, we had to work out who was putting the £5 in the petrol tank to get here this morning. That was a whole thing in the car. Like, oh no, hang on, I'm on -10. He had £3. Meg spent her last penny on a Belvita from the cafe around the corner.
It was worth it.
So like we had to look at ourselves like we managed to put money away for like a recording fund. Everyone was like individuals. Obviously, me and Liam also do acoustic gigs, like just covers and stuff around London. Just put some pennies away. It was like, we need to be recording this music. We need to find the funds. But we were putting ourselves in crazy situations to make that happen. And the investment felt all wrong. There's something about making it happen ourselves that feels more right. And also, the rewards may not, the quality may not be like what the songs eventually will deserve, but it feels honest. It feels
right. And it gets out people to listen to as well. I think there's, you get stuck in this trap of like, well, we don't want to release it where it's not at its at, and then maybe isn't, you know, many people that can listen to it right now. But then if we don't release it, there's nothing for people to find. You're stuck doing this thing of like, you don't want to put out sort of, you know, work that isn't reflective of like, you know, we wrote these songs, we love them, and we want to be able to, you know, put them out in the way that we hear it, but if we're then stuck with two, but if we don't put them out at all, is that not worse than putting maybe not what we'd like to put out?
I think you're going a really good way around that, and that's quite a different approach that I actually don't hear very often. It's like not just going for it, because everything's just a wide open goal now with Spotify, and you know, distribution sites are really accessible, which has been great to get more music out there, more diversity. But it's now becoming a bit of a free-for-all, and everyone's lost in the noise. So actually, it's quite nice to hear, if you're holding things back until there's an opportunity and the time is right and you're happy to do it, then...
Depends, like Dan always says, It's like, again, me and Dan are so different, I think, over the years. It's the chair, I promise. Me and Dan are so different, and over the years, I think we've taught each other valuable lessons. And Dan's biggest thing is, like, what are you doing? What's your why? What's the reason you're doing this for? Like, I would be like, I'm going to go say this and say this to that person. And, you know, but what do you want out of that situation?
Yeah.
And I think that taking that into the music is like, okay, what we're going to release for? Why?
Yeah.
Because, it, you know...
But there's that balance, though, isn't it? Where, like, you're very much... take action.
Yeah, I am.
Whereas
yeah.
I will plan.
Yeah.
I will plan until I'm 70 years old and never actually get it done. Which is a helpful skill to have in some ways, but you just drown in planning.
Yeah.
So that kind of sense of line.
The two of you work, though, because you...
Exactly
that. So, like, everything's got this real centre line of intent behind it. It's that, do you know what I mean? It's that kind of...
Yeah, and that's the beauty of having a collection of people, because bands are also becoming a bit rare now. They're everywhere, but somehow they're not up front. They're not like all the big front runners in the charts or, you know, in all the genres. Actually, there's a lot of solo artists now, and it's nice when you have a group to be able to appreciate a dynamic and to work off each other, to balance each other out, and to just think it through a little bit more and bring wisdom to the centre of all things.
I don't know if there's much of that.
I'm not bringing any of that, but I can feel
it's me.
It's all me.
The Alpha Sessions.
Thank you so much for coming in. I've had a lovely time.
Yes, thank us too. Thank you for having us. It's been brilliant
to chat to you. So I hope we can have you back again. And I hope these songs do make their way out there into the world.
Yes.
And we'll be looking out for them. I hope anyone at home who wants to go and find them can go listen to you and keep track of what you got coming up, your gigs. How can they find you on social media?
It's just Penny Skint. There's no one else with that name. So we're quite fortunate. So just Penny Skint.
The old SEO results did well there.
Wherever you want to search us.
I feel like we've trauma dumped a monologue for the last like 20 minutes, but thank you for having us.
That's exactly the way I like it.
My dad left.
Roll credits.
The Alpha Sessions.